This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around New York City, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Wesley Schultz of the Lumineers. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Eric Holland at WFUV. Holland, dude, this is such a cool session. We got to hang with Wesley for a bit in Manhattan, and this set also includes some cool acoustic songs that were recorded in Denver. And obviously, I think at this point, our listeners are pretty familiar
with
the Lumineers. So talk to me about your chat with Wesley and this new album, which I'm personally pretty obsessed with.
Wesley, a raconteur, a great conversationalist, couldn't have been any more like sitting at a bar or, you know, in a living room. You know, he has that kind of energy.
Warmth,
yeah. And I just love to get a little insight into his songwriting. You know, what sparks things and his relationship with Jeremiah, which is so easy and natural and just effortless.
Yeah.
And we got to talk a little bit about going up to Woodstock, recording at the old Todd Rundgren place up there.
Right.
Beyond that, looking forward to this mad show at Citi Field. You imagine these guys, you know, world-beating stadium fillers at this point.
Yeah, and he does talk about that in the interview. So all of our listeners out there, keep your ears out for that moment. Wesley talks about playing to the last row in a stadium or arena. So if you've got tickets to this show in July at Citi Field, just imagine Wesley's playing just for you. What is the first song from 35 Left Studios that we're going to hear in this session?
From the album Automatic that came out in February, here's Same Old Song, FUV Live.
Hey mama, would you pay my rent? Would you let me crash in your basement? Cause any one of us could make it big or could end up dead on the pavement. And if I was to die, if the plane went down and you survived. You ever wonder what your parents meant when they told you grandma's in heaven? Cause I don't feel it like I did back then in a black sedan of depression. And everyone's alright, I cannot afford to see the light. I don't know what's wrong with me. I killed the move so naturally. The guests begin to make me feel alone. Same old song. We sing the same old song. We sing the same old, same sad song. In the prayer where the tar pit's black, like a starving mouth for the innocent. You said the boulevard was not that bad, and they jacked our van with the instruments. In the broad daylight, they popped the trunk and left the keys behind. All the cops pretend to care. I'll never see my mom's guitar again. I don't know what's wrong with me. I killed the mood so naturally. The guests begin to make me feel alone. The party has been done for hours. I'm laying on the bathroom tile and spilling all my guts below the throne. Same old song. We sing the same old song. We sing the same.
FUV Live with the Lumineers, that same old song. The new album is Automatic. I'm here with Wesley Schultz. It's Eric Holland. We're in a swanky hotel here on the far west side of New York. And we just heard a special duo version that you did, in your rehearsal space in Denver West?
Yeah. We spent a number of weeks trying to learn how to play the record live with our touring band. Because when we make the records, Jared and I, we make them just me and him. And then our bass player, Byron, comes in, on demand. But it's always a funny putting the puzzle back together with everybody trying to do it live.
Touring as a six-piece, right?
Yeah. Six, and we sort of have seven now with a dude named Derek Brown. He's played for the Eels, and he's been our drum tech. Amazing musician in his own right. Started playing different things throughout the set and now has become on for about a third of the set.
Well, you said a mouthful there about being dead on the pavement or making it big. Such a random, crazy world. Immediately connected with that.
Yeah, I mean, I like telling the story because I used to listen to FUV on the East Coast religiously, and I called in to give a donation at one point, and they announced me as the first time I was ever on the radio was donating to FUV. So I always have a very fond memory for the station and the things they would play and the music they would expose me to. But going back to the lyrics you referenced, there's a sort of absurdity to this whole thing. One minute you're a busboy and you're doing open mics, and then it feels like the next minute you're playing venues that are bigger than you could have imagined or dreamed. So I think that is kind of hard to cope with if you're not careful. You can believe that it all had to do with just you. I think it's a positive turn in music, celebrity or acting or anything. But I think the younger generations are much more aware of how fragile and sometimes random that can be. In our case with Jer and I, my songwriting partner, we grew up together in New Jersey. We've been writing for 20 years together now. And I think that helps us find some more firm footing in all of that. It's kind of a strange place to be, and you got to figure out what's yours and that, what you don't own. And I've had a lot of talented musician friends who, what I feel like, prematurely give up, or they give up because of real circumstances. Maybe they have a child or they get a job that they just can't not take, and they don't do that thing, and you can kind of see it slipping away. The song, same old song, it's sort of a smattering of all of these crazy memories over the last 15, 20 years. And then the root of it is the hook, which is same old song. We sing the same old, same sad song. Some of the things that I always go back to, where I always can find that anchor in my life that brings me back to, oh, that's what it feels like to be a human being and feel emotion. And I felt like that's music's gift to us. There's something mystical about its role with us as people trying to get back into touch with ourselves. It can feel pretty removed at times.
Some albums remind me of me.
And to feel. I learned watching my kids, who are now 7 and almost 4, music makes them feel. On my way to school, my son always wants to listen to this a hip-hop song from Transformers. He wants to get psyched up for school because I think he's a little nervous. But music has his way of, no matter what the moment is, there's a soundtrack for that moment. And if you're well-versed in music and you have that Rolodex, you can call upon that and it can be your friend. My wife's mother just passed away just a few months ago. Album 3 and Gloria, all about her. She dealt with alcoholism for most of her life. And I've never seen an addict like this, and she could just handle it. And when she was passing away, they put on Leave On, and it started rolling through. And at one point, it played Daniel, played a song called Brandy. My wife's name's Brandy. It was freaking everyone out. And she was holding on and holding on and holding on. And then when she passed away, Billy Joel, Don't Ask Me Why, came on, and it just felt perfect. But these were songs that forever her and her siblings will always lean on and remember in a weirdly fond way. When my mom went, that was what we were listening to. So I think music is just this strange soundtrack that gives us this amazing amount of comfort.
There's got to be some solace in the fact that you immortalized her in a way on 3.
When we first put out 3, I was pretty fearful of hurting her. I didn't want her to hear it and feel judged or feel exposed in some way that was negative. In a weird way, my goal with that album was to say, if she heard it, she would be fair enough, that is how it is. And so would her sons and her daughter, trying to say what really was happening and not having, this is my good guy in the story and this is my bad guy in the story. It was a really hard situation. And who would voluntarily seek that out? That life, she was homeless. And I think in 1 year, she had gone to the emergency room over 90 times that they knew of. It was kind of the stuff of nightmares, but she was always like this. She was just that type of survivor person. She could get through anything. So it was weird almost to see her go and be like, wow, this is actually happening, because she seemed so indestructible no matter what she did.
There's a lot of humanity in same old song. Mentioned the phrase about making it big or on the pavement, but there's also the great bit about being on the bathroom floor after drinking too much.
Yeah. When I turned 40, we had this big party. We had the Felice Brothers. I think you guys play.
Sure.
And they're one of my favorite bands from Catskills, New York. That's where we actually recorded this album and our previous three before that. We had this big party, and they played this party in the tent in my backyard to celebrate turning 40 and New Year's Eve at the same time. And a bunch of us got, we all got sick, like, you know, that norovirus? All of us got this, but we didn't know. It was like a ticking time bomb. And so it's around 1 a.m., and I just, like, left the party to my room, and everybody thought I had had too much to drink. But meanwhile, it was like 14 hours of just next to the toilet. It was bad, but that was like a funny memory of being like, everyone's having a good time and I'm up here just dying. And the previous line is like, my wife's always like, why did you just say that? Why would you bring that up? Because I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I killed the mood so naturally, the guests begin to make me feel alone. I think a lot of people who are in deep and close relationships, they have this phrase in various forms it comes in, but it's kind of like either why would you bring that up or land the plane. Like, why are you saying that? Like, end the story. And I think I've never really shied away from those. Like, I'm always curious, like, what do you think about this? So a lot of the song is just sort of a sense of humor about how you can drive each other crazy in a relationship, but you actually love each other.
I really relate it to maybe saying something that's not such a great thing to say and feeling awkward about it.
And then the next day you wake up hungover and you're like recounting it and you're like, why did I do that? But then a couple nights later, you're right back at it. It's just it's a quirk. I think our family grew up loving debating. There's a lot of that in me. And I think a lot of my friends who know me well and my wife are like, yeah, that's Wes. He definitely does that.
It's Eric Holland talking with Wes Schultz. It is FUV Live with the Lumineers. We've got a couple of special duo performances. We heard same old song. Why don't we press play on Keys on the Table? Can you set that up for us?
Yeah. It has this phrase in it that's in another song. It's a title of the other song called You're All I Got. It kind of echoes in this song. It's like a running theme of the record, which is when you're really entwined with someone else. Like you have a child and they're everything to you, or a marriage, or in my case, a marriage. And then you also have this musical marriage. It's like you're beholden to someone in this way that's kind of uncomfortable, but it's also provides you with the best parts of your life. And I think that's the double-edged sword. This is the two sides of the coin that exist with true love. And, you know, when you're reliant on someone, that's a great gift, but it's also like a feeling of vulnerability. Like everyone wants to be their own island. And yet, it's so lonely being on just as one person. So this song, it feels like a standoff between two people saying, if you want to leave, you can leave. Like, there's the door. If you want to be here, that's your decision. But I'm not going to, like, make you stay. It's kind of like a tense but sweet song. And it was recorded entirely live together in the same room. So it's got this feel that's like, this could go off the rails at any moment. We didn't know the song very well at the time. So
Jeremiah and Wesley, FUV Live, The Lumineers.
Ashamed to breathe, I can't sleeping in the car park. Everybody knows you're all I got. You're all I got. Would you sell me?
FUV Live with the Lumineers. The new album is Automatic. That tune, Keys on the Table, perform with you and your 20-year man. You mentioned playing it live, and you were up there in
Woodstock, Bearsville.
Is Utopia Studios then?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of history there. Could you feel that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a place out there about 20 minutes away. Because of the history, I think I just fell in love with the area.
Albert Grossman built it, right?
Yep.
And that was Rundgren's home base for many years.
Exactly.
I picked up a nugget that you set up kind of a live room with a lot of gear, multiple pianos in there that really allowed you an opportunity to be spontaneous as much as you can in a studio and really try to capture some creativity as it happened.
I mean, there's the very famous documentary during the pandemic that was released, Get Back, and you kind of see the Beatles sitting in a room making music. To me, it's funny because it's like, I can't believe they're just hitting record because we're so used to like the modern era of wanting to fix things. So how can you go back and edit if you did it that way? The magic was in their chemistry. The soup, the broth they made together is like why it's special. So if someone's late on something and someone else is like reacting to that, there's something really human and beautiful about that. And I think I would say like not every band, but I would say a lot of bands as a whole and acts have gotten away from recording in the room together or making it feel gelled. It's more like on Monday, the drummer did his take, and on Wednesday, the bass player, there's not a whole lot of like interaction happening. So I always try to think of analogies. Like if you're making a movie and you're filming one side of a conversation, and then days later, the other person records, that's not going to feel the same as them staring at each other and delivering those lines. And yet we've gotten really far away from that, including us on certain albums, especially in the beginning. So I think the irony is just getting back to playing with each other and having the benefit of a real reaction in real time, as opposed to like, well, that's done. So now you got to work around this thing I've made. That was a really big gift. David Barron was pretty instrumental. He was our engineer and one of the producers on the album. He was instrumental in setting us up for that. And then I teased him that he kind of regretted it because then we kept wanting to do everything live. And he was like, no, this is too much. But I think it made his job easier. There wasn't 1,000 takes. It was just 2 live takes. If there's not enough good stuff here, we'll go and re-record it again. But let's work with what we did. We give not enough credit to a listener in what we used to love about music and what we're coming back to, I think. Like, I remember seeing Bon Iver do Skinny Love on Jules Holland and being like, what is this? This is psycho. And it's just one man, live take, change your life. He does Heavenly Father as well in the Sydney Opera House. He's just one example, though. That used to be the thing, and now it's very controlled. It's like we're all returning back to some level of innocence that is so much more enjoyable. As a listener, you can hear someone reaching for a note, someone wondering if they're going to hit the right chord. That stuff is where the magic is.
Yeah, and it raises the stakes.
Yeah, you feel the urgency as opposed to like, I got 20 more takes, so I don't need to nail it on this one.
So you mentioned David, who co-produced. You co-produced for the first time, right? You and Jeremiah?
I guess, like, this is not to sound resentful of it, but we spent 7 or 8 years making our records, just home recording. that's a great way to spend some time anonymously experimenting, really making up your own mind. So when you get in a room with a producer, if that's what you choose to do, you have some knowledge of what you want to do and you're not just being handed your opinion. So I feel like although the first time we're being mentioned, we've always been part of that producing. I think this time we felt comfortable enough, like we weren't stepping on anybody's toes. In the beginning, you're kind of like just taking what you can get. You're just happy to be in a quote unquote real studio.
Right. Well, I mean, you used to record your vocals, what, in Wes's bathroom?
I would stand like 6 feet from a microphone and use the tile of the bathroom to like get a reverb. I heard somebody say, I don't like giving advice. And I would agree. Like, it's kind of uncomfortable because it implies that you know what you're doing. You're just doing enough to figure out what you wanted to do. And sometimes by making mistakes, in quotes, that you wouldn't have found had you not made that choice. So I would say all that time left our own devices that no one cared. There's no one writing about it. It was just anonymous, truly. That's sort of like when you read Outliers or you learn about like the Beatles in Hamburg, learning other people's songs and playing for hours every night. They were just able to explore a lot of different things before anyone like told them it was good or not. It was just them playing around. And then they had this rich palette instead of if you're discovered at 17, 18, you're kind of like handed a script, which feeds into plasticine. But that's a slippery slope when you're a piece of clay and someone molds you and you're not part of that process or you're not the one doing it.
Plasticine is such a great word and for a lyric. I remember there's a Who song on It's Hard with plasticine. Do you know that tune?
No, but I know the Beatles song, Lucy and the Sky with Diamonds. Plasticine. He says something with it, and that's where I remember hearing it. But no, what's the song you're talking about?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obscure song. I think it's called It's Your Turn, maybe. But I definitely remember the line. It's, I was a face in a magazine. You were still playing with your plasticine.
Wow. It's like saying you were playing with your Play-Doh for like a British person. Well, Play-Doh didn't sound cool when we were trying to write the song. So immediately I was like, all right, what can be the word that embodies being very open to suggestion, almost to a fault, with really strong ambition and desire to get big. And it's not even about like anybody in who gets into music. There's easier ways to make money, but it can be about being seen and getting famous. People can really take advantage of someone like that. And I think I like to say that the biggest benefit we had was this very delayed, any sort of semblance of success. I was like 30 when I got signed. So everyone basically told me I sucked, which is like a really good place to come from in a way. If you look at a lot of like the most successful athletes, a lot of them aren't the top of their class growing up. So they've learned at an early age, like, you're not that good. You're okay. And my mom used to say, you know, I love you. You're not the best, but if you work really hard, maybe something cool could happen. And that was a real gift for me because I felt like I knew she loved me, but I knew she wasn't going to tell me something that wasn't true. And that was a preview of what music is. You could write about the thing that just hurt you so bad and you could be trying to express it, but somebody might go, that is a garbage song. That's the reality you live in, is your intentions don't matter. And the amount of time you put in doesn't matter. What matters is whatever you put on that record. There's like a bottom line for people. And if it's giving them goosebumps, if it's making them cry. I always play stuff for my wife. Even if she doesn't mean to, she just tells you how she feels. I can just read it right away. So I'll play her stuff and I'll know right away. She didn't say a word. But if I get her to cry, I'm like, I'm onto something. And there's something about music that does that to me too. I'm sure you play him. Stephen Wilson Jr. said all the wars from now on should be fought by old men. And I was like freaked out by the song. And it doesn't happen that often. And I was like playing it for someone else. I started crying just playing the clip. And that stuff doesn't happen every day. Someone's tapping into something. If anybody was ever like young listening to this conversation we're having, just try to make stuff that moves you and the rest is not in your hands. The minute you try to make something that moves you or anyone else, someone outside of yourself, that's not the compass. You've lost the plot. You have to have a gauge for that. Maybe plasticine's like a sort of cautionary tale. So I think that's why we glorify punks. Like when Bob Dylan's like, I'm not going on that late night show if you're going to censor my lyrics. The reason we like that is because he had a principle.
I don't need Ed Sullivan.
Yeah. That torpedoes your career. And he's just like, no, I'm good. I'll just do it my way. I think we understand authenticity when we encounter it. And yet so much of what the music business tries to do, remove the authenticity for the convenience of making money for a label or whoever else in that moment. It's on the artist, even if they're not prepared for that confrontation, to be like, no, I don't want to do it that way. Those are hard decisions. It's been presented to us. It's not fun, but you're like, there's only one way.
We are winding our way towards the end of an FUV live session with the Lumineers and the playing of Plasticine as a duo with Wesley Schultz and Jeremiah Freites. And before we get there, you mentioned, you know, if you had been signed at 17, for example, but you paid those dues in New York. I don't know what you were doing, working as a bartender. And
that would be a nice gig, yeah. I was like a busboy and a barista, very part-time. Bartender's like your god amongst men. I was a server, a barista, and sometimes a bartender if I was lucky.
And at that time, the Mercury Lounge was the mountaintop trying to get a gig.
Couldn't get in there. No.
And you got a City Field gig in July.
Yeah, wild, yeah.
So not bad.
Who'd have thought, man? I'm a Yankees fan, but it's cool. We used to play Rockwood Music Hall, and then it's not in operation anymore, but the living room. And then there was this place that had the Naked Music series where there's no microphones allowed. And that's how we learned how to busk. You just had to shout at people and play your instruments really loud. Yeah, so to go from that and the Bitter End and Pete's Candy Store and to City Field is like surreal, doesn't really do it justice, but it's going to be fun. And I think we've been really trying to make the show feel great from the back row in a way that I remember seeing Springsteen at Giant Stadium. I literally sat in the second to last row and I was so happy. I had the greatest time. There are shows that can be big that can be amazing. I think it's about the artist's intention. I still didn't get to go because we were touring, but Taylor Swift, she had a stage with video screens on her stage where she walked. So if you had the really good seats, you couldn't see what all these people in the quote-unquote nosebleeds could see, which is like a whole new cool idea that if you take the back row and make them feel special truly and they give them something else that no one else gets. So I think there's an onus on that. And in 2017, we got to open for U2, and they're like the pioneers of making it work in a big room. It comes down to a lot of intention and like trying to incorporate the back of the room and not just play to the first 10 rows, because that's not how it works in those places.
And a great song's going to get over whatever the room.
Yeah, it's a little bit like being at a festival in some ways, dancing with your friends. That's what Bruce is the master at, you know, in addition to telling stories and fainting and being revived by a sax player. To me, it's like an art to make a big room feel small and a small room feel big.
July 11th is the night at City Field for the Lumineers. The new album is Automatic. Wes, what a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. I'd like to make another donation to WFUV after this broadcast.
Please do so. And when you called in, was it Wes from Ramsey or Wes from Brooklyn? Do you remember
it was
where you
Wesley
were?
Schultz from Ramsey, New Jersey.
Too cool. We will say aloha and do an FUV live duo performance of Plasticine.
Plasticine, I can bend me into anything you need. Self-assured. With a team of writers feeding you the words. Welcome to this party. Welcome to this party. You and I both had high hopes. Radio is active, your success is so attractive to us. Everyone said, carry on, kid, hiding all your pain behind a fog inside your brain. And now it's mixing up all our friends and enemies, wasting all of your precious energy. Plasticine, I can bend me into anything you need. Self-assured. The teleprompter's feeding you the words. Welcome to this party. Welcome to this party. Mixing up all our friends and enemies, dressing up in a precious melody. Plasticine, I can bend me into anything you mean. Self-assured. welcome to this party.
That was Wesley Schultz from the Lumineers for FUV Live Sessions and songs from a special duo performance with bandmate Jeremiah Freites. A big thank you to Wesley for sitting down with me to chat, and to 35 Left Studios in Denver for sharing songs with us for the session. The music you heard in this episode was mixed and engineered by Josh Osman. Our FUV Live in-studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Diana Juarez and Ina Volovich. Ina Volovich edited this episode. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. If you like what you hear, make sure to rate and review the show. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. I'm Eric Holland for WFUV in New York.